In today's episode of the Motorhome Matt podcast,
we're talking to our good friend Martin Dory about his new books.
In the news, two different parking schemes from two different councils in one little town.
And we answer your questions on whether air suspension is worth getting, LMB tow bars, and more affordable lithium alternatives.
Welcome to the Motorhome Matt podcast. I'm Keith Gooden.
And I'm Motorhome Matt.
Industry insights and expert advice for the world of motorhomes, caravans and campervans, all brought to you by thatleisureshop.com.
And remember to follow on your favourite podcast app. And if you're watching on YouTube, please do click subscribe and hit the little bell. And YouTube content is brought to you by our sponsor, arrowbasecreative.co.uk.
Fantastic. Let's delve into the news on Devon Live. This one caught my eye, Matt. Devon County Council's new permit parking zones in parts of Exmouth came into effect last August, and the district council's all-day £2 winter car park, that offer began in November.
It's good value, isn't it?
So it's already a bit complicated. One in August from the county council, one from the town council in November. Now, I said about 18 months ago I'd been to Exmouth and how lovely it was and wonderful and the seafront, and I saw motorhomers parking across two parking spaces and paying their money, and everybody was being nice to each other, and it seemed like a dream. No longer. What's happening is there is a boundary down the middle of a road in Exmouth, in the centre of Exmouth. And if you park on one side of the road and get your ticket from a machine on t'other side of the road, you'll still get a parking ticket, because one's the county council.
And one's the town council.
And one's the town council. And ditto the other side of the road and all the rest of it. But that's not all. It's got even more complicated than that. What they have done is introduced residence parking in the streets in and around the town. And that means if you don't have a residence parking zone ticket, you can't park there. So what's happening is commuters who use the rail station have filled the long stay car park behind the station. And because it's in the centre of town, residents wanting to go to Exeter for leisure can't park.
There's nowhere to park.
There's nowhere to park. So the £2 fee has now meant the short-term car park by the leisure centre is now jammed all day, but not by shoppers.
By commuters.
Yeah. Councillor Ben Ingham has said the repercussions of this are shoppers can't park, so go elsewhere, gym users can't park, and annual permit holders can't park, which negates the purpose of having a permit. Meanwhile, the coach and lorry park, remember, we had van lifers staying there 18 months or so ago. They were turfed out for it to be renovated. They'd been staying there for months at a time, not bothering anybody. Well, now the coach and lorry park, according to Councillor Ingham, remains a largely empty space. No lorries, no coaches, no van lifers.
No motorhomes. So where are all the motorhomes?
What do you think of all this,
well,
then?
This is chaos, isn't it? Why do councils find it so hard to get parking right?
Well, they need to raise money. Central government has cut most councils' grants by 40% over the last 14 years.
Yeah.
So they are stuck for cash, and parking is one of the ways they can raise it. But it does seem in Exmouth, which, according to me, just 18 months ago was a parking paradise.
You were quite taken, weren't you?
I was indeed.
Sort of rosy-eyed about
it. 6 months later than that, we had van lifers who were staying in the lorry park, which wasn't being used, and they were having a great old time of it as well. All that's gone, and Exmouth is now parking hell.
Parking hell.
Parking hell.
Like some Hollywood voiceover.
So there you go. And the water and the water companies are pumping you know what into the sea.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. And you're drinking it. I would say if you're going to Exmouth, you're listening to this and you're thinking of going down to Exmouth this spring or this summer, tell us how you get on. Did you find anywhere to park? What was it like? Were there motorhomes anywhere? Was it just parking hell everywhere? And what about the lorry park? Was it empty? I'll be interested to see if that fills up. This is ridiculous.
It'd be great, wouldn't it, for van lifers and motorhomers to be able to use the lorry park, pay for it, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's empty. It'd be great, wouldn't it? Get some tourism into the town, get some people into the shops as well. But will it happen?
I bet this isn't the only city where this is happening. I remember in Bristol, there was the same thing. If you paid at the meter across the road, you weren't actually buying a ticket for the space I was in. You know, and I got a parking ticket. It's like, well, I've got a parking ticket. pass. I bought one wrong side the road. It's ridiculous. Why is it so ludicrously complicated? I don't understand. And I think this is a theme we're going to see this year. We predicted this at the beginning of the year, didn't we? That people are going to want to go in their motorhome to non-campsites. This is going to make that tough. And it means ultimately that people are going to be falling foul of the rules and getting it wrong, parking in the wrong place.
Getting tickets.
And getting parking tickets.
Or being
tickets.
Moved on with the knock, the middle of the night knock.
The knock, knock, knock.
Oh, yeah, what are you doing here?
Well, parking hell. Maybe that's going to be a theme this year.
Parking hell. What's our product of the week from that leisure shop this week, Matt?
Well, we've tied it in with our lovely guest this week, who is Martin Dory, and we've got some of his books here. This is the Campervan Bible. This is everything you need to know about going away, using, buying, everything to do with campervanning. It is such a stunning coffee table book. It's one of our best sellers in the shop. And we've also got here one of the Take the Slow Road series. This is Ireland. If you're thinking of going to Ireland, this is a must-get book. This is Martin's story about his trip around Ireland. Loads of hints, tips and advice. Beautiful photography. And you can get all of these books and more at thatleisureshop.com.
It's the Motorhome Matt podcast. I'm Keith Gooden.
And I'm Motorhome Matt.
Brought to you by thatleisureshop.com. This week we're talking to the popular author and speaker Martin Dory. We've just taken a thumb through his books. Tell us about Martin then, Matt, would you?
A thumb through
his books.
That was a good vibrato there. I love it. Yeah, Martin's a superstar. Martin's famous for lots of things. He's famous for his 2-minute beach clean. Have you heard of this campaign? It's amazing. Lots of beaches, when you go on them, you see a little stand with a litter picker and a bag. And the idea is you borrow them and you go and spend 2 minutes just picking litter up off the beach, getting rid of the plastic, getting rid of the rubbish, pop it in the bin bag and hang it back up for someone to take away and dispose of.
What a fantastic idea, because you're not one of those, are you, that says, I didn't make the mess, I'm not touching it.
No.
Somebody make the mess, you pick it up, just like I do.
Absolutely. But what's wrong with going and picking up someone else's mess? You know, they've left it and disappeared. So this whole campaign Martin launched is massive, and I've taken part in it many times, and I often see the 2-minute beach clean campaign. It's like, yep, I'm going to go and do it. It's so easy to do, and it's really good, and it's a great talking point when you're getting on the beach. And Martin's a big environmentalist and campaigner, and he's actually been really ill recently. Martin Dory, MBE.
Yeah, I was awarded that in 2023 for my environmental work with the 2-Minute Beach Clean Project.
And you were famous for 2 minutes. No, and it was the 2-Minute Beach Clean, wasn't it?
Turned out to be the 2-Minute Beach Clean, yeah. But the thing about 2 minutes is you start with 2 minutes and then you work your way up to...
And what a campaign. I mean, what a success that has been.
Yeah, it's been really good. I mean, it started with an angry walk on the beach when I was...
That's not like you.
No, I know. And I just started picking up litter and then decided I would use social media to try and get other people involved. It went sort of global, so it's incredible.
Oh, well, that's the point. It's gone from Bude to the world, isn't it?
It is really quite remarkable.
Well, it's a great recognition and it's a great effort. You've got some new books. You're famous for the Take the Slow Road series of books, which are just beautiful. They're stunning. You've been on the telly box. I mean, you're a household name, Martin. But what's the new project?
This year, I know that when we met in October, I was on crutches because I'd just broken my ACL.
Yeah.
So I haven't done much travelling in the last 12 months. I had a book project called The Green Camping Book, which I've been working on, which basically looks at camping, the industry, from a green point of view. It's more towards tented campers, but it does include stuff about caravans and motorhomes and campervans. And it's just really about helping people to reduce their carbon footprint. So, you know, choosing tents that are recycled over ones that are made from virgin plastic, and how to just kind of live a more sustainable camping life based on the fact that we know that nature is in crisis and is in decline, and actually camping is one of the first touch points that people have quite often with nature. So actually, if you're a campsite owner, you've got a massive opportunity and responsibility to provide a really good natural experience for your campers. It basically will tell campers how to find places that are doing that really well, but also asking campsites how to do that really well so that they can offer a really good experience. And on the basis that if you get to know nature and get to love nature, then you will find the next step, which is learning to protect it, is easy. There are certain things that are happening, like Alan Rogers, for example, have started, and they are the only ones that do this. You can search on Alan Rogers' website for environmental criteria. They're the first people to do that. And I applaud them for it, and they need a shout out for it, because everybody else should be doing the same. Yes. So this book is basically about kind of looking at the industry, looking at how it's going, applauding where it's doing really well. And it is, you know, don't get me wrong, that the motorhome and camping industry is doing well on the basis that we have to protect what we love, right? We're all here.
So I wanted to ask you about that. So you're here walking around the show.
Yes.
And we're surrounded by big plastic boxes, which is a real put down. I know that. They're not all plastic. But you say we're doing well. You know, these things are expensive.
Yeah.
There's an environmental footprint in their production. And then we go off and make an environmental footprint in their use. What have you seen that has kind of made your eyebrows raise in a positive way?
Bailey have brought out the concept vehicle.
The Endeavour EV.
So they're actually looking at EVs, which is great. I know it's not going into production, but they're using ocean plastic for their worktops. And actually, part of looking at that van is actually looking at the process behind it. And I know Bailey have done really well with their kind of cutting down the carbon footprint and their offsetting and all this kind of stuff. And actually, you know, I'd like to see them shout about it. Vango, for example, have got great big signs saying that these tents are produced from a certain number of plastic bottles, so they're recycled. They're shouting about it. The more the industry shouts about what it's doing, the more other people will realise that they should be shouting as well. And actually, we can't ignore this issue. We can't ignore the climate. And yet, sometimes this can tend to, and I wish it didn't, and I applaud those who don't.
One of the things I loved about the Endeavour EV was the cork floor. We don't see many of those, do we, in this industry?
Well, you know, actually, I was hoping you'd ask me that, because one of the vehicles that won one of the awards in the Caravan and Motorhome Club Design Awards was the Project Yonder Mercedes, and they've used a cork floor in there. And actually, those two are onto something, you know, because cork is a renewable, recyclable, waterproof and lightweight material. And actually, why aren't more manufacturers using it? Because when it gets dirty, you can sand it back, you can clean it. It's really lightweight, it's natural. And actually, by using it, you could be supporting an industry that's dying, because as we know, wine is now corked with plastic corks.
Well, the wine you drink might be. I mean, mine isn't.
Well, obviously the posh stuff is still uses cork. But the majority, I would say, of the stuff that I get through, you know, either has a screw top or a plastic thing. And so the cork industry is suffering, which means these ancient cork trees, which are, you know, hundreds of years old, are getting ripped out and replaced with crops or whatever or something else. It's an ecosystem. Cattle live underneath it and they provide shade, all this kind of stuff. These cork trees go and we lose that. And actually, if manufacturers were using this material, which is Portuguese and Spanish, so it doesn't have massive transport costs, it will biodegrade at the end of its life. You can just rip it up, chuck it in the compost. You know, it's not being transported. It's not a plastic that's being transported from Asia. It's not a petrochemical. So actually, and it's a really, really great flooring material. So manufacturers, come on, let's see more next year.
If you're listening or watching, then cork floors are the way forward.
I absolutely think so.
What's the cost? How's the cost compare to its alternative, which would be wood or plastic?
I imagine it's a little bit more expensive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these are the sort of things we have to do. If we want to be environmentally conscious, we may have to spend more money. And that's one of the sort of things that we have to accept. Whether or not the market will accept it, I don't know. You know, the manufacturers have the opportunity to decide. And if all that's on offer is cork flooring, then everyone will accept cork flooring. It's as simple as that.
Maybe if more consumers asked if it had cork flooring, maybe that would drive the change.
Well, it would be great for everybody to go into a motorhome and go, oh, I'm a bit disappointed there's no cork floor in here. Why isn't there cork floor in here? You know, actually, cork flooring as well, if you drop something on it, it won't break. There's so many properties about it that are absolutely brilliant. And I'd love to see more of it, that's all.
Now, you mentioned your injury. You were actually in a wheelchair. Say you're on crutches in October. You were in a wheelchair before that this show, weren't you?
This time last year, I was pushed around the show in a wheelchair. I was on crutches. Yeah, waiting.
And you're all better now?
Getting there. I had an operation. So the show was in February. I had an operation in March to mend my anterior cruciate ligament, which is, you know, the career-ending injury for professional footballers.
Yeah,
obviously didn't bother me. You know, I'd still crap at the piano. It didn't affect my... all that sort of stuff. And Wimbledon was off in 2023, because of that sort of sideways movement. Yeah.
But it's just as well we're getting better, because tell us what's happening for you this year. You're off on a bit of a bike ride.
I've decided I'm going to have a year away from the van, and I'm cycling on an electric bike, I have to say, with a trailer pulling surfboards from Bude in Cornwall to Sagres in the bottom of Portugal, basically cycling the whole of Western Europe's coastline. In order to surf and kind of discover the history of surfing, but also discover for myself a little bit of the landscapes, the people, the culture, and basically just live outside for 3 months.
So how many miles is this?
It's about 3,000 kilometres.
What?
If not more.
But why? Why are you doing it?
Because my partner's a really big cycle tourer. I want to go cycle touring. I love cycle touring, but I don't want to go without surfing. Okay. So we concocted this trip because we wanted to do a cycle trip, and then, well, why don't we go down the coast on bikes? But then we have to take boards. So how are we going to take boards? Stick them on trailers. How are we going to do trailers? Well, let's take electric bikes. So there's a whole kind of level of ease and difficulty that's put into that. And the idea is just to be outside and just to connect a bit more.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes when you tour in a motorhome or a camper van, I mean, I've been writing my Take the Slow Road books since 2016. That's 7 years now, and all the trips I've done have been in a camper van or a motorhome, and it's time to do something different. And I've found sometimes that while a motorhome or a camper van is a really great safe space, mm-hmm. so for people traveling on their own, for families, you know, I will never knock them, but sometimes you could be a bit in a bubble too much.
Yes.
So the idea of camping and taking a tent and being lightweight is to be more nimble, more agile, get closer to the kind of people and the landscapes, and just to breathe a bit more, really.
And will this spark a book for you, do you think?
Oh, yeah, of course it will. Yeah.
Can we follow you on this trip?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to be starting... The book's called The Way of the Waves, which is kind of after the Way of St. James.
So you've already planned the book.
Oh, yeah, no, the book. I have a deal already. The book, the deal is in place. So all surfers, as you probably know, do this kind of pilgrimage down the west coast of Europe.
Yeah.
And it's for British surfers, it's often the first place they get a taste of real surf. And I've been sort of talking to people who did it in the 60s, who were like literally the first people into Europe to surf. And actually, I'm going to follow their stories and follow this kind of pilgrimage to the places that I know and love, have been to before, but also the places that are really famous for surfing. I mean, Nazaré, you know, people surf 100-foot waves.
Yeah.
We've been to see it, and it's
surfers' paradise, isn't it?
Well, or terror, hell, if you're an amateur like me. But, you know, to go and see these places and meet the people who are doing it and kind of find out what it is that drives people. And, you know, we know that camper van culture was... Part of that was driven by surfers. Mm-hmm. Who I spoke to a surfer who used to go to a secondhand auction in the Netherlands. This is in the early 70s. Bring vans over to the UK, convert them, and sell them to surfers going to Morocco. The whole thing is mixed up with our industry and the beginnings of it, and you know, the V-dub type too.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting, and I'm really looking forward to sort of getting stuck into it, and I probably talked too much about it already.
No, it's a fascinating trip, and you've no environmental impact at all, presumably.
Well, very little. I mean, obviously we'll be charging the electric bikes,
yeah,
but that's minimal, really, and we don't really have a choice in that. We can't get enough power out of solar to charge the electric bikes. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible. Minimal impact, hopefully we'll be eating local as well, which is obviously very important. Lots of baguettes, lots of red wine.
And when do you push off, as it were?
At the end of May.
End of May.
And then we have 90 days. So we'll be home, all being well, 89 days later with 1 day spare just in case we get stuck.
You're not going to try and apply for a visa again?
No, I did get a visa for doing one of my books a couple of years ago, as you know, which was really difficult and quite expensive. Best not talk about that.
No, let's not talk about that. So just to finish then, 3 top tips from you, Martin Dory, MBE, on how we as motorhomers, caravanners, campers can change our own environmental impact by using these beautiful vehicles.
The first tip would be to stay longer. So slow down. Because, it's, for example, if you're going to go and do the NC 500, it's like we do it almost like it's a tick box, and you race around it, you stay one night in each place, and you don't contribute anything to the NC 500. You upset the locals, you're part of the traffic jam, and actually all you're doing is spoofing diesel and not really experiencing it. So if you stay on a campsite for 2 or 3 nights, you get to stop, slow down, use your bike or walk to the local area, do some walks, do some hiking, do some whatever. You take longer overdoing it. You immerse yourself more, you get to meet more people, and actually you're not using up quite so much of the old juice.
Diesel. Yeah. So stay longer on a campsite. Tip two?
Tip two would be get all your staples from a plastic-free shop. Get some Tupperwares or some old yogurt pots or whatever. Go and get your rice, your pasta, your oats. All your dried staples you can get from a plastic-free shop. Generally, surprisingly, they can be cheaper than your local supermarket. You produce no waste, so you've got no rubbish to take away with you.
Just take the Tupperware home.
And take the Tupperware home afterwards and use it again. And, you know, there are waste-free shops all around the country. They're really brilliant places to shop. that sort of slowing down thing, because you go into a waste-free shop and people are nice, you talk to them, they help you, you get chatting, you get your stuff. There's no packaging, so you've got nothing going in your bin, nothing to take away, and you have a different experience. You slow down a little bit. My third one. When you're at the waste-free shop, get yourself two or three tins, one for soap, one for shampoo, bars, and one for conditioner, bars. And if you're a man, buy a real razor and a bar of shaving soap, and then you're producing, again, no packaging. So your bathroom stuff is in lovely tins. You slip them in your pocket to go off to the shower block, open it up, da-da-da-da-da, no messy bottles, no mess, no fuss, easy.
Top tips, there we are. Thank you very much. Martin Dory, it is so good to see you up and about, looking well.
Thank you. And well, and you as well.
Hanging in there. We wish you every success with the trip in May.
Thank you very much.
We will be following with interest. Where can people find you online on social?
You can find me on @MartinDory on Instagram is my main social media. So if you follow that, I'm going to be starting a blog, because obviously we can plot our way with GPS. So hopefully people will be following our journey, and I'll be blogging all the way and actually making some film as well. So hopefully there'll be videos out about the trip, and kind of, you know, when I do my Ellen MacArthur moment, when I've got 500 miles to go, and I'm, you know, I'm really tired, the battery's flat, and I've got a really big hill to go up.
Yeah, I can hear it now. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you on the other side.
It's the Motorhome Matt podcast with me, Keith Gooden.
And with me, Motorhome Matt.
Brought to you by thatleisureshop.com. It's that time of the week again. It's our Q&A, questions and answers, where you ask the questions and Matt the expert answers them. Alison Irish got in touch.
Do you think it's worth getting an earth suspension on my motorhome? A lot of people have recommended to get one, but I just wanted to know your opinion and whether you think it's worth getting a suspension, or whether you'd suggest something else, or if it is worth it, why is it worth it?
So there's Alison getting in touch with us. Thanks, Alison. Air suspension.
Yep.
Why should she get it?
I did go back to you, Alison, and ask you which motorhome you had, because that's a consideration as to whether this is a worthwhile investment. The first thing I'd say, the different types of air suspension, the big benefit, firstly, is the ride. It transforms the ride. So when you're driving along, how it feels to drive. Massively improves the stability, raises the back end, makes it slightly firmer. It honestly is transforms the ride, particularly if your motorhome is a big, heavy unit. It's transformational. The other thing you can do, of course, and benefit from is the fact you can raise the back of the motorhome up. So we have an Adria Matrix Supreme on our hire fleet, and it's a very long motorhome. It's on a Renault Master, and it's nearly 8 meters long, and the overhang at the back is really big, which means when it goes on and off of a ferry, it can very easily grind out. Now, it's got air suspension fitted, and with a bike pump or a foot pump, you can very easily, or even on a pay-for pump on a fuel station, you can very easily put air in the back and raise the back up. It takes hardly any time at all. And that means getting on and off a ferry is much, much safer. You're not going to risk ripping the bumper off. And then the other type, it's auto-levelling. So there's an air suspension, which means you can drive onto a slope on a campsite, for example, and if you're not quite level, it will automatically level, and it will move, inflate, deflate the airbags to level up the motorhome. Really, really useful feature. It's a brilliant system. As long as the slope's not too extreme, it can be really useful. So if you're in a small motorhome, I'd say the benefit is probably limited. But if it's a big, heavy motorhome with a big overhang, it can be invaluable. And if you're particularly going on and off ferries, then it can be really useful.
Yeah, these air suspension systems have been in high-end cars for quite a few years now.
Yeah, that's right.
Have they been in motorhomes for just as long?
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's a company called VB Air who've been around a long time. They make lots of systems, but one of the ones that's been around the longest that I've seen anyway are just two airbags that go in the rear bumper stops, and they just inflate. They're literally like a football, and they push the motorhome up. This really simple technology. And as I say, you just use a bike pump, a track pump, you know, the one you push up and down. Or, yeah, that's the one. Don't make that noise again. Or a foot pump. And if you're going to use a fuel station, you just have to be really careful because you can very, very quickly over-inflate the bags. There's a gauge with a safety and minimum maximum, and you should never over-inflate them. You should also not allow them to completely deflate because that can cause the bag to actually decompose, I suppose is a phrase. You should keep air in it, and there is a minimum, that's why. But people like VB Air, and there's a Dunlop bag that goes in the back, they are really, really good, and they're not that expensive a system to have. So if your motorhome needs it, then it can be a worthwhile accessory.
Chris Bassett's in Bristol. He writes, is the Towmaster 2 car conversion fitted by LNB tow bars compliant to tow through Europe? I have asked the same question to another YouTuber and was told the only way was to use a trailer for the car. There seems to be a lot of confusion. Can you help? Asked Chris in Bristol.
Well, it's a great question, Chris. I spoke to LNB and it's a bit of a can of worms, this. So LNB are an installer. They're also in Bristol, just up the road from us, and the Towmaster to car conversion is one of their products, and they claim it is compliant in Europe. Now, my understanding is that towing a car in Europe is not recognised in Europe as compliant with European law. It should only be used as an emergency recovery device rather than a trailer, which is how the car is considered in the UK. Now, the argument, as I understand it, has always been that if it's legal in the UK, then it's legal on the continent in Europe because we were part of the EU. LNB claimed that this particular product is different and is compliant to all international law. And so you can tow a car on the back of your motorhome in France or Spain.
So hang on a second then, Matt. So you've got the LNB one fitted. I pulled you over.
Yeah.
We're in France. Bonjour, monsieur.
Bonjour.
Je suis un gendarme.
Bonjour, gendarme.
You, sir, are going to have to put that on a trailer. It is illegal.
Illegal. Yeah, so that's been always the understanding. So the only way to tow a car in France is on a trailer or in Spain.
So what are you going to say? So you got your LNB. What are you going to say to the policeman? What do LNB provide?
Un momento. Is that Spanish?
Yeah, that is Spanish.
So LNB give you the justification as to why this is legal in all the languages you might encounter in Europe. Genius.
Well, you have to learn it.
No, you just give it to the gendarme. Oh. Say, oh, mate, read this.
Merci, monsieur.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to read it?
I have a gun.
Yeah.
Take the car
on my
off now. Maintenant.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? It may well be legal. We are going to talk to LNB about this. I've asked for Lee if he'd come on the podcast and talk to us about this topic and about this product, because this goes against what most YouTubers probably are reporting and talking about.
It may well be legal, but is it practical?
Well, there you are. That's the question. And ultimately, if that copper with a gun tells you to take the car off and you've got to drive it, or you can only take it with a trailer, what are you doing?
I'm not going to do that now.
No. Well, I've talked about this before, towing a car back from a holiday in the Italian Alps, and we were going through the Mont Blanc tunnel, and I was told you can't take that through the tunnel on the back of the motorhome. So there were three of us in the motorhome, so one of us had to get in the car, unhitched it, and we had to pay the toll for the car, and we drove it through the tunnel, got out the other end, hitched the car back on and carried on our way home, of course. But we were told to take it off. In that scenario, I don't think it would have mattered whether that tow frame was compliant to any law in Europe or wherever.
It was probably fire regs in the Mont Blanc tunnel.
I think they just wanted the extra toll. And they were being inconvenienced on us. You know, they were inconveniencing us. It's an interesting topic. So the answer to your question, Chris, is LNB claim that this particular product, this Towmaster to car conversion kit, is compliant on the continent, and they will give you supporting documents in all the languages you need to explain that to policemen. So whether you want to take that chance, that is your call. The normal understanding from everybody else is that the only way you can tow a car on the continent is on a trailer, and that's probably going to be the perception of any policeman that you encounter. But this may be an option. But we'll get LNB on and we'll get Lee to talk to us a little bit more about it.
They are, Chris. Hope that's been of help. Roger Carpenter's in Portsmouth. This is a technical one, Matt, so bear with me. I've been looking at upgrading the leisure battery, but our motorhome has a Sargent EC155, which can only take up to 120 amp hours. or AH. So two batteries aren't going to achieve much, and I can't afford a lithium setup at a quoted £6,000. What are your thoughts on a separate solar generator? The market's full of them, some offering similar power delivery to lithium with a built-in inverter and various power outlets, 3-pin plugs, USBs, etc. You can get them with separate solar panels. The EcoFlow Delta 2 offers 1800 watts, which would cover most appliances and charges really quickly. I would appreciate your thoughts on this as an alternative. If you're buying them without a battery, you can only use them, it's only generating power when the sun is shining.
If you have a solar, yeah, that's yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Roger, I think you're onto something here. We've been looking at this for our own motorhome. I don't want to put a lithium battery in it. Again, like you say, 6K, it's an expensive install. We've got an Adria Twin. I don't want to put a lithium system in it. I can't justify the cost. We are actually looking at either this EcoFlow system that you mentioned. We're also looking at Jackery. That's another one. And they are a brilliant alternative, which are hundreds of pounds compared to the thousands of pounds of lithium that you need to install. And all I want to do is recharge my MacBook, maybe an iPad and phones, and we can do that really easily off one of these portable power packs. And it comes with a solar. We can put it outside when we're next to the van in the sun and recharge it. Or if we want to hook up, we plug it in and recharge it. We're actually doing a load of shows this year, and we're looking at taking one of these units to run all our iPads and our sum up machines, you know, the PDQ machines you tap your card on to pay, rather than paying for electricity on the stand. They are a very, very viable alternative, and I think we're going to see sales of these spike, and thus I think we're going to see the cost of them coming down. I'm already seeing prices for these new starting to reduce. So yeah, Roger, I think you're onto something, and I'm thinking the same as you.
Cheers, Roger, and thanks very much for all the questions today. How do people get in touch and ask you a question then?
Really, really easy, and we'd love it if you did, only because there's no such thing as a daft question, and if you ask it, I guarantee you there are hundreds of other people thinking the same. Just go to mhmp.info/askmatt. That's mhmp.info/askmatt. Fill in the form or click the little orange button and record your question. We love getting them, and please tell us where in the country you are.
And you can subscribe on YouTube as well, can't you?
Just hit the little bell and hit the subscribe button, and our YouTube channel is sponsored by arabasecreative.co.uk.
And don't forget to share this episode with a friend.
If you've got one. Have you got any friends yet, Keith?
I have a French gendarme who is my friend, and I will be talking to him about an LNB product very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Motorhome Matt podcast. Remember to check back here for more episodes full of hints and tips and helpful advice. We'll see you soon for another Motorhome Matt podcast, brought to you with thatleisureshop.com.